who had an amazing time at Shah? Let's hear. I think this can go better. So, how was your time at Shah? Very good. So, Shah is an event which is organized by volunteers, which is run by a lot of angels helping everywhere. So, before we start with this technical infrastructure review, please give a big round of applause, not only to thank all the angels, but to motivate them for the next days for the teardown in hell or in rain. So, one big applause. And to give you some insight, what has happened on this event regarding all the infrastructure which was provided here, we have this talk. It's tradition to get an overview from the various teams. And this year we have the, and now it gets difficult because I have to speak Dutch, the Productiehuis, which was completely wrong. So, yeah, sorry, German. Now it gets easier. We have the Chaosvermittlung. For everybody who doesn't know what that is, it's the field phones, which you found everywhere, like the landlines, which you could use to call each other. We have the NOC, our Network Operation Center, the POC, the Phone Operation Center, and power. So all the things you use all the time and which makes this event much more amazing, much more comfortable, and gave you the possibility to relax on your tent with your cooling gear and stuff and hang out and surf the web and do whatever you wanted. And call each other all the time. So, let's start with our first group, the ones I can't pronounce right, so I don't try at all. Brix, I think it's you.
So, let's start with Productiehuis. We're actually two teams. Team Productiehuis from Shah 2017 and C3VOC, which in total was around 12 people core team. We had we did the AV here on stage and the lighting and the LED walls and the sound. We did the FM radio across the road from here, and we of course did the video recording and streaming. We had four stages, and we thought we could do with two cameras, video mixers and audio mixers. And we could get enough angels to do that. That was a little doubtful. But in the end, we had 46 angels who did video mixing and audio mixing mostly. We had three remote angels in Berlin and perhaps somewhere else, I don't remember. And they did a lot of editing the talks after they were recorded and before they were released on media.ccc.de and on YouTube. I think I can claim to have most LEDs of everybody else here on this field. I did check it with Team Badge, and they admitted that I might have a million or more than them. So the two screens here in PA and in NO are about half a megapixel each, and the one in RE is 2.3 megapixels, so that makes in total of 3.3 million pixels. AKA 3.3 million LEDs. At the last check I did, we released 139 videos, which means that we're almost 90% complete on the event of all the talks that we're allowed to record. The most watched video on YouTube has 1,000 views, which was the talk on day one from Bill Binney about what the NSA is doing to our privacy. The same talk has 9,700 views on media.cce.de. During the event, we noticed small audio issues left and right, a little hissing and a little humming noises. One of our team fixed that in a FFmpeg source and forgot that it was on a new major release. So it was a little exciting putting that live and going like, okay, we'll see. But it worked fine, it's actually working. And the highest level of people who watched the stream at a certain point was 125 viewers, which was for the car hacking talk yesterday, I believe. So what went right? Once we got started, day-to-day work worked fine. We had a few problems with the LED walls, with the resolution. That was resolved on day zero, fortunately, just in time for the event to start. And we had a little audio quality problems which we fixed along the way, and we hired a little external audio processing. And on day four, we were at the point where we could record a talk, and before the end of the next talk, we had it released on YouTube and on media.cce.de. So we were almost real time. And now the fun stuff, what went wrong? That's moiré, because the cameras were picking up the individual pixels of the LED wall. So you have this really interference pattern between the CCD chip pixels and the pixels on the LED wall. This is a photo of a LED display and then back on the LED display. So the effect is slightly overblown, but this makes this causes a lot of change in media from frame to frame, in the picture from frame to frame, which means that the MPEG has, each new frame is completely new almost, so that you get huge amounts of bandwidth, which in the end someone said, we didn't have enough seconds to put all the megabits in. The encoder machines all crashed, all hung. They couldn't cope with it, so we had to change the way we recorded the video. No cameras zoomed in on the LED screen. No, and only if you do a total view of the whole stage, do it from far away, and don't move cameras, because moving cameras changes the interference pattern, which adds to the interference, which makes everything blow up even more. Because we had so much pixels being changed every frame, we found a bug in one of the Linux MPEG decoders, because on one piece of one of our team members is using, I don't know which player, but it had that color band on the bottom on every single video, which had the interference problem with a lot of megabits. So we dialed down the bandwidth that we use on the videos, and that problem was solved. And it's not in VLC, but in some else player, in a different player. And we also had a problem. We had a bug, a physical bug in the power supply of a switch of a computer, which resulted in one of our encoder cubes crashing on day one. And they, fortunately, we had a spare supply, power supply, so it was fixed in, I don't know, 5 minutes or so. But it needed. There was a physical bug in the fan, and it died. Both of them. The top graph is the amount of simultaneous viewers in all the streams we had. So radio, and four stages, and the bottom graph is the CPU load on all the encoders. So you can see there are some peaks, and those are talks where a lot changed on stage. And that's it for Team Production House. Thank you very much.
So next up is Chaosvermittlung. So do you want to plug yourself in? So first, thank you very much for the team. You're making fun of me. That's not right. That's not what you also said. Okay. We learned. So one thing we definitely learned is LED walls make stuff harder if you want to record stuff. I think this was one of the big learnings we took away, that LED walls might sound like a good idea, but aren't so much. So. Yeah, we have the perfect person to fix everything. So in a minute, we come to the next team, the team Chaosvermittlung. We combined that. Okay, I didn't have that information. But fine. So we will not only hear from Chaosvermittlung, but also the POC, the Phone Operation Center. On other events, so in this event, it was, I think that you call it was MicroPOC, right? Yes. And as far as I know, you're quite new. So you're doing it since some events. But on other events, you have perhaps met Event Phone, but these are not the same guys. It's a new team. And we'll hear how it was working for them on this event.
So. So, Team POC, yes. So, some key facts on what we did. So, there's a lot of cabling already.
Oh,
really close.
Like
okay. Like eating it. Okay. There's really a lot of amount of cable already in the ground on the whole field. So, we just had to add a rough 3.5 kilometers of extra cabling to deploy you with over 28 base stations for the DECT network. And we did it with a hub and spoke model. So, there was not like one single point where all of the DECT station connected to, rather than some hubs where we all connected them, so we didn't have to have like 20 kilometers of cable, so just 3.5. And we had the system up and running, at least in the core area, on day -4. And it ran without an interruption, even when the power failed, because we have like batteries in our stuff. So it worked quite well, even when the Tetra failed. So so basically, this is our plan, what we did. So you can see all your fields and all the cabling and all the stuff. And the blue stuff you can't really see on the LED walls, those are our phone PBXs, so the switches where all the DECTs connect. So a lot of base stations, a lot of fancy stuff. It worked. So some facts about the usage. We had over 750 registered DECT. You registered over 180 zip accounts, which were actually used quite a lot, and we provided over 35 desk phones for the stages, for the info tent, for wherever you needed a desk phone. Some of them via zip, some of them directly connected to the PBX, depending on how much cable we needed to get them running. And the zip phones were provisioned by us on day 0. And the last one got up on day 2 because it took the NOC very long to get our VLANs running and so on. But they worked. So our phones. Some other fun facts. You basically called the whole world. We had calls to India, the Vatican, China, and even North Korea. And we had some nasty copper squirrels cutting our cables, connecting the DECT base stations to our main PBXs. And so we did a search and recovery, and it took us under 2 hours to get the base station running again. There were nearly 14 hours of incoming calls and over 150 calls, hours of outgoing calls. I basically called Germany, the Netherlands, and Austria, in that how it appears is how much you called it. And the longest single call was to Wallis and Futuna. I don't know where it is, so we Googled it. It's somewhere in the Pacific. The call was over 2.5 hours. So, then the nasty copper squirrel.
Hi, I'm SJA from Chaosvermittlung. We do the field telephone So yeah, we have this switch manual switchboard, and it's battery operated, so we do not have any battery outage or do not depend on power supply. Some key facts: we have 60 switches capacity plus 10 additional for Orga. We deployed 25 field phones. There are 11 public field phones around. We also connected 2 teletype writers over our switchboard. Also, we have a DSLAM. We provide field DSL. So there were 3 DSL lines in use, including Wi-Fi for logistic entrance. We deployed it at, I think, 2 o'clock in the morning because they were sitting out there without power, phone, and Wi-Fi. So we say, hey, let's get a golf cart and drive there and deploy a field DSL. It took, I think, until 4 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. The longest cable was 1.4 kilometer for the parking. We deployed 7 kilometers cable and have 24.5 starting at D-1. We have 2 angels normally at the switchboard. Sometimes they had a lot to do because they are ringing all the time. Sometimes it was not very useful for a POC because they are thinking, hey, ringing, 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 but it was okay. So, some public field phone. We also do a little description. It was at the beginning, there was, hey, please press the button in the ringer because you can't speak. But at the end of the event, it was okay. So we also had we have 4 connections to the deck and to the PBX, and there was with 15, I think at last with 20 users, a conference call with field telephone with 4 countries. Okay, and there were also at least 5 people, they bought a new field telephone for the next event, and you also had to do because we have at least 120 channels to also connect you.
So, thank you very much. We definitely see that even when messengers and stuff comes up, we still stay with phones and we go kind of back to reliant good technology and stay with this. So who of you has used one of these field phones? Ah, quite a bunch. Who will do this next time? Because you know, just learned about it. Okay, so we perhaps have to get this into the opening and just not just in the end. So everybody knows what to look for. So. We do the questions at the very end for all the teams. So now we come to NOC, the Network Operations Center. To be honest, I haven't seen as much this use more bandwidth signs as other years, but I think there were still some left, but I think you will give us all the information we need now. So here you go.
Hi. Hi, I am Wilco from NOC, and this is Arjen. I'll let him explain about the vision.
Oh, next one. Yeah, so like at previous hacker events like CCC and EMF, our vision is mostly still the same. We want to give you gigabit and 10 gigabit Ethernet to your tent and give you a very fast experience. We want to give you decent Wi-Fi. It should be privacy enhanced. Filter-free net neutrality trademark.
And buzzword compliance.
Oh, and compliance. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yes. And most importantly, we want to have a lot of fun building the network.
Yeah, so we're running mostly on donated hardware, which is very nice. Thank you, guys, who give us stuff. So we mostly got data center switches and data center routers, and they're not really campus routers. So we have some design constraints there. So you cannot terminate a really large VLAN on a box that cannot handle very large VLANs. So that gives us some restraints on our design. But still, we were able to do most of the stuff with just a few gaps on our own stuff this time. So we only filled some gaps, mainly the uplink stuff and a few switches that were used in the core. So all in all, pretty good. So the concept, well, you did most of this stuff, so.
Yeah, so this time there were already three data centers on site which we could use and just put equipment in. So that was very nice. That is N0, E0, and L0. And N0 is on the street, and the L0 building is very nearby here, and E0 is the one in the middle of the big field. And all of the Datenglows, except for I think only 6 or 7, are actually uplinked with a 10 gigabits single fiber. So we're using just one strand of fiber and putting two colors in there to get a full duplex connection. And this year we decided to do routing already in the Datenglow. So that's by the principle of route early and route often. And the reason we did this is to offload the distribution routers, which are not really built for routing lots of users. So this is a very good way of offloading that. We use routing protocols, of course, to distribute routes across all of the networks. We're also using DHCP relay this year, which is something we haven't tried for years because it always sucked and didn't work. But this year it seemed to work, so that's nice. There are some switches that don't do routing, don't do layer 3. Those are just terminated at the nearest Datenglow, and it's routed right over there. Also for Wi-Fi, we use Aruba access points, and they tunnel all the traffic to the controller, so that also fits nicely in this design. Oh, I'll do this one as well. For the planning, we used QCAT, and we're working together with Team Terrain, and all of the stuff is published on map.xiao2017.org. If you're interested, you can go there, you can enable the NOC layer, you can see where all the Datenglows and all the cables are going. But we're using all of that stuff to calculate the length of all the fibers, and then use a script to assign all the fibers. And this was actually needed because we have around 50 fibers going across the terrain, so it would be tedious to figure out the right fiber for the right path. This year we also used a web-based diagramming tool. It's called draw.io, and it's pretty nice. You can put all kinds of metadata in there, and we actually use that to create our topology, and also use that for scripting and config generation. Since last CCC, we've also been using NetBox for IP administration, and this also... We have some fans, I guess. But this has also worked out pretty nicely. It's also good for integrating with your config generation scripts and that kind of stuff. Like I already said, the scouting landgoed here, they invested quite a bit in their on-site infrastructure, and they already have these three utility buildings and 11 field boxes which have 8 cores of single mode fiber. And this is really, really awesome because it saves us a really shit ton of work. So kudos to scouting.
So yeah, some figures. So we have three data centers, right? One that has the uplink, and we have two for our cores, which is essentially completely distributed because We don't have very large boxes that can route. We have the data center routing boxes. So we separated all the visitor and Orga VLANs and essentially had 6 routers in our core. And then the uplink router and that all that stuff. It was basically fully redundant except for the services. We made 50 fiber cables. I think a bit more actually, but at least we went well over 9,000 meters of fiber. Yes, it is. So, 75 access switches that were deployed in the field, in all these data enclosures and in some tents. The edge routers, access points, 300 transceivers were used. That's basically how many links we had active and used for our routing, sponsored by Flex Optics. Thank you very much.
Basically, already talked a little bit about that.
Yeah. So
you can't do. Wow.
We seem to be missing some pixels because our network is slightly larger than the screen can display. We separated the visitor Orga Wi-Fi, we had 4 times 40 gig uplinks to the edge routers. So that was enough. And we did, for layer 2 redundancy, we used MC-LAG, that's multi-chassis link aggregation, so that if one of the data centers would actually lose power, then everything would still work. So that actually worked out pretty well. Because of routing constraints, it is actually. So we took some advice from some local village people. Yeah, so basically we ran OSPF in the core, and that was for redundancy purposes mostly. The village people told us too. We also had a fiber splicing party. We had it on the 8th of July, where we basically invited people to come learn how to splice. We did about 100 splices. And I'm pleased to say I did less than a quarter of them. And the rest was done by all new people that just came in and wanted to learn how to do this. And that's really, really great, because we had a lot of new fibers to unroll. We test them and fix them. Thanks everyone for showing up there, because that was really, really helpful. One of the new fibers, just for the parking lot, to give the angels that have the long shifts there, to give them some internet, we actually made a new fiber of 666 meters long. Also was used for ticket scanning there, but mostly for the angels that sit there, because they're really doing a good job there.
You cannot read this, okay. I will share the slides afterwards. Okay. Uplink was easy this year, I guess. It was a 59-kilometer dark fiber provided by UNET, and we have a fan. Okay. And it's going from the site here to, towards Nikhev. But the fiber was already here on site because Scouting invested in getting fiber here to the site, and they already have a permanent connection here installed, and we can use two spare fiber cores for that. We only had 13.5 dB of loss over this distance, so that's very, very nice. Two Juniper MX240s we had installed, one on site and one in Nikhev, and we used an interesting bit of equipment to do 100 gig, which is a tunable coherent 100 gigabit transceiver, and it can fit this in a 50 gigahertz channel. And that also gave us the opportunity to make a backup uplink using DWDM muxes. So we actually had a 100 gig and a 10 gig backup, so 110 gigabit of uplink.
Yeah, so transits and IP. So we got an AS number from Surfnet and a /20 of IP space that we can use for at least this year, which was very nice. And we got, that's basically what we used for bootstrapping everything. Then we got a /16 of IP space from RIPE, which is basically a temporary assignment. So we could give everyone a public IP address, which is basically completely unfiltered, and you have a public IP, do with it what you want. Event Infra has a /32 of IPv6 space, which is enough, and we used, well, 3/48s, I think, for this event. So yeah, let's, well, thank our upstreams, actually. NTT provided us with 100 gig of bandwidth, plus 10 gig for our backup link. Core Backbone gave us 100 gig, Surfnet gave us 10 gig plus the AS and /20, and then we had a 10 gig peering on NLAX, and basically it was all done zero budget, which is very nice. Well, this is definitely your area.
Oh. yeah, so we, like at previous hacker events, we used Aruba setup again, this time 272.10 controllers, and we were for the first time running Aruba OS 8.1, so it's a sort of a test setup, and there is also a, it's what they call a mobility master, which is a virtual machine that does a lot of the coordination between all the two controllers. And it seemed to work out okay, but we had some issues with the out-to-channel assignment, where some of the channel assignment didn't make any sense, so we had to tune that just to do some static channel planning around that. 120 access points we have deployed, and we've seen at peak 2,800 clients and about a gigabit of traffic. In the end, we've seen about 7,400 devices on the Wi-Fi. So that's, I think, we'll get to that. But a lot of them are badges. So on the bottom graph, there's also, but you can also go to dashboard.sha2017.com to see this bottom graph. It's actually a graph that shows how much clients are connected in a certain area, where you can see possibly which talk would be the most interesting, so you can see it by track tent or by field name. So, well, we got some complaints on Twitter and also stating like, is this 2.4 gigahertz dead? And maybe the question is, yeah, pretty much, yeah. This is a graph that shows the top 10 most utilized access points, which has it's the highest airtime utilization. So we see some access points here that are almost at 100% channel utilization. So at that point, it becomes absolutely unusable. And also, one of the causes is that people also are bringing their own access points and not sticking to a certain channel plan, so that is just making the problem even worse. We've seen around 200 of those access points which do not belong to us, but just people have brought into their village, or maybe they have like a personal hotspot enabled on their telephone, but that makes the problem even worse. And In a site like this where everything is open, the 2.4 gigahertz problem is kind of shitty, yeah. We have some obligatory usernames and realm stats. We also offered EdRoam and SpaceNet here, so not much exciting stuff going on here. For some reason, there's a lot of people from Norway here, so... okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so like we said, we had three data centers, and they were pretty packed, not just with our stuff, but also with stuff from POC and VOC. So basically all the pink cables on here, that's all basically POC. And the flight case next to it is Steam Sysadmin and our own servers. Here you see a whole lot of our fiber patches, which is basically the fiber patches that we patch through the Datenclose using the field boxes from the scouting terrain. But yeah, they were pretty full. Because, just count the flight cases that have to fit in this tiny little bunker. But we managed to get the air cons in and all the flight cases stacked nicely. That was pretty cool. So IPv6 users was a little disappointing. 21%. At some point, actually, was pretty high because somebody was apparently doing some downloads with 10 gig over to IPv6, and then it worked quite well. Most of our stuff is actually on Wi-Fi these days. So there were, 7.83K of users on Wi-Fi and only 913 on wired, which is interesting, especially for the routers that do the Wi-Fi. A lot of traffic. We actually peaked above 10 gig for the uplink, it's both incoming at some point and on the downstream, upstream that is. The getting 100 gig here was worth our time because otherwise we couldn't have handled that little peak.
We've seen about 2,000 badges or something we've classified as expressive. So it's pretty good, I guess. That's more than half of the badges that have been handed out have at least been on Wi-Fi, so it's good. Fiber to the boat. Yeah. I'm not sure what I'm looking at, so... This is the problem. We've been editing this slide deck with six people, so...
you see here fiber basically mounted to the pier with duct tape. There's a fiber rule in a... one of the tires that's a spacer between the boats and the pier as well, that where we have a little loop. We actually spent quite some time getting fiber to everywhere, including to the boats. We also learned some lessons because the Wi-Fi that did not really work out too well on the data center routing switches. Fortunately, we had the MX240s that would that could fix it for us, which we basically got on loan from Juniper. There was a tiny switchover point where we moved. I think about 3,000 users over from one router to another that could actually do the big slash 18 of Wi-Fi space. Slash 19? Oh well. Doing OSPF with four vendors on hundreds of link required a bit of coordination to plug everything into the right port because everything was numbered. We also had some crashes. I'm not sure if you could see it, but this is basically the day since last Quagga crash. We had to fix that a little bit. but
well, everybody's heard we about fixed the it. Bird. Bird, bird, bird. The bird's a winner. Well, the bird, bird, bird. The bird is a winner. Well, the bird, bird, bird. Well, the bird is a winner.
So, if you don't recognize it, that was obviously the word. Bird is the word. So we switched all the Cumulus boxes over from Quagga to Bird, and then the network was stable. So birth is the word, actually. So, yeah. Thanks, whoever did that. We'll wear gloves during teardown. So the Datenklo logs weren't exactly secure, but at least nobody pooped in the Datenklo this time. Oh, yes. You want to tell about this?
Oh, yeah. So we're running these ArtNet lamps on every Datenklo, and we didn't really bother securing it, and some people noticed. So the Italian embassy, they kind of hacked our, have compromised our nice little ArtNet infrastructure. Yeah, check out the link. It's on the wiki somewhere. There was a nice lightning talk about this. And so the ArtNet is actually DMX over Ethernet, and we didn't bother securing it, and they are basically accessible from throughout the network because we're running this nice little routed network, and we didn't bother to put any access list on there. So you might still have a couple of hours to try this out, or if you can find out where the things are connected in the network. But.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Right now, actually, the abuse is actually ramping up. So we'll probably receive some more in the next week or so, because I think we had to shut down the mail client now because there was like 15 coming in every minute. But when we made the slides, we had 380 abuse emails, mostly automated stuff, and mostly caused by a few people scanning the entire network. And there were some serious hacking attempts actually made from our network. We had to act on that, obviously, basically by making sure that that destination was protected. So any traffic to that destination was dropped from that point on. Because scanning is nice, but intruding into other boxes is, not a thing. Not without permission. So we actually mentioned most of the supporters already, these are actually everyone that made the network possible. Please give a big round of applause to all our sponsors. Yeah, then we have a general announcement. Goodbye. Sad to see you go. Network will be torn down at 6, so the camping fields will lose their active equipment after 6. And on Thursday, everything will be gone. Be kind to a fibers and see you at Congress.
Okay, thank you very much, dear Nock. It's always a pleasure to have you and to have internet everywhere running all the time. Now we come to the next group, it's Power. So, yes. Perhaps you can't see this there, but there's a puddle on the stage and it's dripping off this lamp. Can you tell me perhaps if this is still secure? I'm not sure. So perhaps it's good we're tearing down. So, let's hear from you, Team Power.
All right, everyone. So we got a little bit short notice on doing this presentation, so I did not make a new set of slides, so I'm working directly from our master power plan. it's okay. It's okay. The notes. The important notes are on the back. So. Okay. So we got lots of infrastructure moved here onto this terrain by our supplier. It was, I think, five truckloads worth of stuff, including 10 generators, 8 of which have been running. One of them was a cold spare that we had here just in case. And the other one was at the South Family Village, basically as a backup or overflow field. So it was not turned on because, well, unfortunately, some more people could have shown up, apparently. Yeah, that's the 8 generators, and we had basically an installed capacity of 1.2 megawatts of power. And this power was then fed into some 300 distribution boxes, running about 20 kilometers of various cabling. These 20 kilometers were mostly, I mean, these many kilometers come from the lots of Shuku plugs and Shuku extension cords that power like all the emergency lightings and everything here. But there's also about, what did we say? For example, there's about 3.5 kilometers of really heavy, really thick 400 amp cable that we used to feed the power from the generator to some of the main distribution boxes. And of course, these cables are like really heavy. Power usage, as I said, we don't have any fancy statistics available just yet. That is mostly because nobody stepped up to do some monitoring infrastructure for the cable or for the generators or the generator cable, which really is a shame, but it cannot be helped. So the statistical usage data is basically from us doing manual rounds from time to time to check on the generator load. We can say roughly that we have been using the generator power between like 10 and 35% of the capacity. For example, we have like one dedicated generator for this field with these two track tents because the team Produktionshaus or whatever that is pronounced asked us for a lot of power for the shiny LED walls. But then, as you may know, they have been turned down to 10%. So also the power requirement is only at 10%. So that generator now is set mostly idle. The most interesting generator is the generator powering the huge field like Olsen and connected fields. We had put two generators there to do a little bit of load balancing and for a little bit of redundancy. These generators in the evenings were typically putting out about 130 kilowatts. Since we know that the pizza oven draws about 14 kilowatts, that makes about 10% of that power that was invested in very nice tasting pizza. And I think that was a worthwhile investment. Now to the, not so party part, which is like the work that has been put in. It was mostly a team of about 10 angels during a build-up that have been working since Saturday, basically from the morning till it was dark, putting out all these heavy cables so that we could then get up and running by Wednesday, more or less within the time. We were, I think, two hours late from our internal plans, if I remember correctly. But that did not really matter. We had some small equipment trouble, but that could be solved. What else can we say? In terms of power, not everything was on generator power. We had some stuff that was kept powered by the scouting grid, mainly for the NOC people, so that there was some redundancy. So we could use parts of the power that the scouting people have here, so we have to thank them for that, or actually you have to thank for them. And now it's about Teardown. Teardown will also, we will start tonight after the NOC has put that or turned off all their stuff. We will start slowly disconnecting the remote parts of the power grid, and we will see how many people are still here and still need power. But most likely, you should expect that power goes out tonight at some point of time for most of the fields. Some, as I said, some fields and some areas will continue to have power. For example, the harbor, they need it till tomorrow, but that's that. And here is a final request. Since we have to move all these heavy cables again, we will put out crates at various locations. Request one, please do not use these crates for trash, they are for cables. Yeah, you would be surprised what we've seen in past events with our cable crates. So. request two, when you see some of our power angels then curling up the cables and you've got some 5 minutes of time, if everyone just helps with one cable, then everything can be put into the crates in essentially no time, and that would be really helpful. Thank you.
So, this were our teams, and even if you thanked all of them independently, I would please ask for a big round of applause for all our infrastructure teams and all the other angels at SHA 2017. So, now we have some minutes left, so you have the chance to get your questions out. If you want to know something about it, the first one is already running up there. Okay.
Hello.
So, please, to who are you, is your question?
First to all of you.
Me.
Two words. Love it.
Thank you.
The second is a question. I need all of you. I want to have another event like this before in 4 years. So please help me. I'm organizing it. I'm Eric. You don't need to need more. But I need all of you, and I have a present for you, and I do this off stage. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Do we have any more questions? Yes.
Yeah. I've got a question for NOC. So with the pixel flood screen in the bar, what was the peak traffic of that? Do you know that?
It was around 3 gigabits.
So, next question, yes?
I have the same question about your location.
Sorry?
Your location. How much traffic was there from and to your location at peak?
It's network, I think.
Yeah. I think they peaked around 10 gigabit or something. That was all they got, so they okay. They filled it up nicely.
So, do we have more questions? Okay, not at the time. Yes, so thank you again for your amazing work. For all the effort you put in, thank you, all the angels, thank all the visitors who are here. Yes, one last big final applause for this amazing event and the closing coming up.